Our next case is 2014-11-61, World Harvest Church versus Grange Mutual Casualty Company. Ms. Keys Walker.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Irene Keys Walker, and I represent Grange Mutual Casualty Company, the appellant in this case. The question before this Court is whether an ISO standardized abuse or molestation exclusion in a general commercial liability policy eliminates coverages for vicarious as well as direct liability when an employee of the insured school savagely beats a 2.5-year-old child in the custody of the school.
Counsel, don't we have some definitional problems right out of the... The definition of abuse? Is that a defined term?
It is not a defined term, in Your Honor.
Okay, and corporal punishment, is that a defined term?
That is not a defined term, Your Honor.
It seemed to me from reading all the briefs, there is no dispute that this lawsuit was about the paddling of a 2.5-year-old child with a ruler. Is that correct?
That is not correct, Your Honor. This was about abuse of a beating of the front and back lower torso that resulted in welts, bruises, and abrasions on the buttocks, upper thighs, back, and penis of this small child.
Where is the term beating?
Where?
Yeah. Where do we find that in the jury verdict?
The paragraph 10 of the underlying FIATA decision, appellate decision, as well as paragraph 52 of the trial court's decision in the underlying case describe
this case. Yeah, the trial judge says there was a beating, but I don't think there's anything in the jury verdict that says there was a beating. The jury found a battery, right?
No, Your Honor. The court, at paragraph 39, trial decision in the underlying Fayetta case, said the jury in this case determined that the marks on Andrew Fayetta's body were caused by abuse, not contact dermatitis, and that was a verdict and determination by the jury that was supported by the manifest weight of the evidence.
That's in the verdict form.
It's not in the verdict form, Your Honor, nor need it be. What the claim was their abuse.
Well, but we're asked to determine, paddling somebody with a ruler, that's corporal punishment. Do we agree?
Your Honor, I just cannot agree with you in characterizing this as paddling with a ruler. There's no evidence that this was paddling with a ruler. The claim was horrific beating. The evidence was welt on the front as well as the back of the lower torso. That is not any definition of paddling that I know of.
All right, so to get to where your policy has something that I'm surprised to even find, and that is coverage for corporal punishment, right?
It excludes corporal punishment from the exclusion for intentional acts from the perspective of the insurer.
Right, so there's coverage.
There is coverage.
All right. And there's no coverage for abuse. Is that correct?
Exclusion for abuse, yes, Your Honor.
But where in the verdict forms do we find the jury found abuse?
If I may, Your Honor, could I kind of trace the test that you go through in this case when you're looking at the evidence as it is summed up in pleadings and the jury verdicts? I think it'll make it clearer. What we have here is a kind of exclusion that has three main characteristics. One is it broadly excludes for a narrow category of conduct. So the conduct it excludes are any injuries arising from abuse or molestation. And then it has to be of a person in the care and custody of the insured. So that's narrow.
Yeah.
The broad exclusion is that it is any bodily injury arising out of, and it is by anyone, regardless of their relationships to the molester. The second characteristic of this kind of exclusion is that it is tailored for the particular business. So when you are at school and you have a special duty to protect the vulnerable population, or you're a hospital or you're a camp, especially vulnerable to abuse or molestation, then this is the kind of exclusion that is tailored to that kind of business. And third, it is self-contained, so you do not have to look anywhere else in the policy to see whether or not this exclusion applies. So here, you look at three things. You look at what was the injury-producing event, was it abuse or molestation, and if so, was it excluded by the policy? And I think that gets back to applying that test, gets back to some of your questions. So the first question is, what is the event or the incident? And that's what these kinds of exclusions look
okay,
at.
Okay, so it's the use of a ruler.
And it is severe beating with a ruler or other object.
It's the use of a ruler. That's the facts. And then the determination whether it's a severe beating or not is a jury question. So I'm asking you, where do we look to find that the jury said this was a beating?
Well, we have to look at what the allegations.
Because what's argued is that, no, that's a term that that Judge Bessie and the Court of Appeals applied. It's not a finding of the jury.
Well, Your Honor, I think the courts would certainly disagree with what the jury determined because that's what they held. And in fact, even World Harvest Church, if you look at paragraphs 122 and 124 of that trial court decision, you'll see that the church suggested that the punitive damages in this case be diverted to an appropriate charity. And what was the appropriate charity that World Harvest Church recommended? Nonprofit organizations that prevent child abuse. They understood that what the jury found was abuse. They understood that what this case was about is abuse.
Well, I'm still asking you, where in the jury verdict do we find the term abuse?
The jury verdict found that Mr. Vaughn intentionally harmed Andrew Faeda, and that gave rise to several legal causes of action.
Okay.
And no legal cause of action is defined as abuse. The legal causes of action when you have abuse are intentional infliction of emotional distress, battery.
Okay,
and that's what the jury
then
found.
Then that brings us to what this argument seems to be about as to whether or not there's coverage because the church is saying we had this unusual situation. It seems unusual to me that you've got Grange's lawyers and the church's lawyers jointly doing this trial.
Right.
And they're saying Grange was there. They didn't submit interrogatories that would have assisted in determining whether or not the emotional harm came from kicking the kid out of school and telling the parents that they can't come on the campus anymore, or whether it came from what happened to the child that day from that teacher. And they're suggesting that Grange had the duty, and that's what the trial judge found and the Court of Appeals found, to submit interrogatories that would assist in unraveling what should or should not be paid by Grange.
Well, first of all, Your Honor, only interrogatories that are encompassed by the evidence and the pleadings would be appropriate in this case. And there were absolutely no evidence, no pleadings, no argument, nothing regarding that this was really not, as alleged, abuse. Once the jury determined, the jury was given two choices. These marks were caused by abuse, or these marks were caused by contact dermatitis. And the jury made that choice, and it came down with abuse. And there was no other option.
Well, you keep saying abuse, but they didn't find abuse. They found
They found battery.
Found
intentional infliction of emotional
right.
distress. And the whole purpose of these subject matter type of exclusions, Your Honor, is that you don't define them by broad general terms, legal causes of action like battery or intentional infliction of emotional distress. Instead, you look at the event. And there are times that is what makes it so clear for both the insurer and the insured, because the insured, who's a school, is not going to be that concerned with or won't understand the coverages it can elect to pay for or not pay for in terms of, is it intentional infliction of emotional distress, or is it a battery, is this, that, or the other. But it will understand abuse or molestation, because that's what these businesses have to protect their children against. And so you have it divided into two elements. One is the first element excludes all bodily injury, coverage for all bodily injury arising out of abuse or molestation by anyone. So you don't have to worry if it's a perspective of the insured, the relationship to
Counsel,
the insured.
Counsel, I guess I thought I understood this case when we started this morning, and now I'm getting confused.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, you have to repeat that. I'm a little hard of hearing.
That's fine. I'm confused now. You represent the insurance company, correct?
Yes, I do.
And the Court of Appeals was somewhat critical, saying that the insurance company has the duty of demonstrating which damages are covered, which are not. Was there an interrogatory to this jury, were these injuries caused by abuse, yes or no?
No, there was not, Your Honor, nor
Why?
Was there, because, Your Honor, the interrogatories were geared towards asking whether or not which of the two allegations the jury is going to follow.
No, I understand that, but I mean, my question is, from an insurance company's standpoint, you have an insurance exclusion in your policy, we are not paying for abuse, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So why, therefore, was the jury not asked, was this or was this not abuse?
The jury, with all due respect, Your Honor, was asked that question. There, when the jury found intentional harm
interrogatory?
They asked, did Mr. Vaughn intentionally harm Andrew Fieda? They said yes. You have to ask that, look at that interrogatory in the context of any interrogatory of the pleadings made, the evidence presented. The evidence presented were welts, abrasions,
but your policy, as I understand it, excludes abuse. It does not exclude intentional harm, does it?
It does exclude bodily injury arising from intentional acts that cause harm.
Well, but it doesn't, because of the specific coverage for corporal punishment.
Well, if you want to talk about corporal punishment, and quite frankly, Your Honor, that was an argument that was rejected by the Court of Appeals, and this court voted not to hear that question, and so that appellate finding still applies as its final. But if you want to talk about it, then you have to look at corporal punishment. What would you ask? You would ask, what was the precipitating cause? What is even a corporal punishment gone awry?
The reason
would
I'm
be
talking
abuse.
About it is you said your policy doesn't cover. What did you just say a moment ago?
Policy
before?
Does not cover bodily injury caused by intended acts.
Okay, but corporal punishment would be an intended act.
The policy has an exception in that same exclusion that clarifies that corporal punishment is not an intended act from the perspective of the insured.
Okay, specifically what the question was, do you find by a preponderance of the evidence that Richard Vaughn intentionally harmed Andrew? Answer, yes. Do you find by a preponderance of the evidence that Richard Vaughn's battery was the direct and proximate cause of any damages? Doesn't say abuse, it says battery. And then it's next one, do you find by a preponderance of the evidence that Richard Vaughn and or World Harvest intentionally inflicted serious emotional distress? Yes.
And it is going down that line that's like Safeco and that whole line of cases and Gearing that said, yes, but an intentional act is only intentional from the perspective of the insured, and therefore you can have negligent supervision claims, or you can have vicarious claims, or you can have these other claims. And all of those kinds of cases are the reason they developed an abuse or molestation exclusion that said, we're not going to look at abstract concepts. We're going to look at the act, the incident itself. And that is what courts do. And that's what plaintiffs plead, and that's what the evidence is. And those are facts that are presented. You would not ask a jury make an insurance coverage determination based upon your finding. What you're asking is, what was the intent of the contracting parties to this case? When you have no hint of discipline being required, no hint of discipline being administered, you have a two-year-old child for which corporal punishment would never be appropriate in the first place, and you have red welts and bruises on the buttocks, upper thighs, back, and penis of this two-and-a-half-year-old child, it is absolute absurdity and common sense to say that that is not abuse.
Do we know that corporal punishment for a two-year-old child is never appropriate? Are we being asked to determine that?
No, you're not, Your Honor. You're being asked to give effect to the pleadings and the evidence and the adjudication in this case, a case in which corporal punishment was never alleged or at issue.
Ms. Keyes-Walker, could we just ask you to briefly talk about the vicarious liability issue in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. The question, again, when you apply the test, the three-prong test of this kind of exclusion, it's very different from the test applied in Safeco and Gehring and those other cases. It is one, what is the event? Was the event abuse? And third, does the policy exclude damages for that event? And those three elements are clearly met here. By saying that the first section of the policy that applies to abuse by anyone. It is by anyone that encompasses vicarious liability, because vicarious liability, of course, depends upon the relationship between the perpetrator and the insured. And that doesn't matter. The key is it's tied in to persons within the custody and control of the insured. So the insured knows that this is where they have a special responsibility. And under the terms of this policy, anyone who abuses someone while they are in the control and custody of that insured, and it results in bodily injury, those bodily injuries is not covered. Same thing as in assault and battery exclusions for bar brawls. It's easily understood. We know, tavern insured, you're going to have fuel-intoxicated brawls, and we're saying for assault and battery that occur in your premises, there is no liability. So it removes these kinds of legal definitions, and that is why jurisdictions, federal and state, across the country have uniformly found these to be unambiguous policies, clearly understood by the insured and the insurer at the time they were entered into, and have enforced them against a whole host of legal theories and causes of action.
Because there is no interrogatory here on the issue that has been discussed, is that a requirement in any of the cases that you're talking about? Was there an interrogatory that would specify, for example, in another case when the word was abuse in the policy, was there any other case where the jury was asked, was this abuse?
Not that I ever found, Your Honor. And in fact, the vast majority of cases decide this issue before there is a trial and find no duty to defend, as well as no duty to indemnify.
Somebody argued, I can't recall which brief, that you've cited a whole lot of cases, but they almost all are sexual abuse. Are there any of the cases that you cite that involve paddling or
abuse,
if you want to call it, the use of a ruler on someone's
Well, Your Honor, we have several examples of physical abuse in the case. One of them that's probably the closest analogy is shaken baby syndrome, that form of arguably could be a form of discipline. You shake the baby in, but they said no.
Well, I don't know anybody syndrome. That argues shaking baby is a form of discipline. But
I don't know anyone who would paddle a 2.5-year-old on the penis with a ruler as corporal discipline either, Your Honor. But the fact of the matter is there are numerous cases where they have, we cite them in our reply brief, I believe. There's also beating of a patient in a nursing home, tormenting of a special needs child, which included taping his mouth and restraining him.
But no paddling. cases.
Before you sit down, Ms. Walker, may I ask, are you in accord with Judge Holbrook's decision on the indemnification case?
Are you
arguing something different?
I'm sorry.
In accord with the determination of Judge Holbrook on the indemnification case, you want to reverse the Court of Appeals and reinstate the trial court? Is that where you are? Or what are you asking us to do this morning?
I'm asking, Your Honor, to reverse that portion of the appellate decision that held that there was vicarious liability, coverage for vicarious liability for Mr. Vaughn's intentional infliction of emotional distress arising out of his abuse.
Based on
the standardized abuse or molestation exclusion, which specifies that there are no coverages for abuse by any person.
So you think World Harvest is anyone in the encompassed term of abuse by anyone in the policy exclusion?
Mr. Vaughn is anyone, and it is irrelevant that his relationship of the abuser to the insured and whether that relationship might give rise to vicarious liability. In other words, if this abuse had been by another student at the school, coverages would be abused. So vicarious as well as direct liability are all theories.
The various forms of award include damages and interest.
It includes damages and injuries?
Interest.
Interest. Whose award?
Wasn't it $1,100,000? Isn't that what the Court of Appeals determined?
The $230,000 in interest? Yes, the Court of Appeals granted post-judgment interest on all covered and uncovered claims as it found them. Our argument would be, of course, because there are no covered claims, there is no interest to accrue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel?
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court. My name is Bob Rutter, appearing on behalf of World Harvest Church. It seems to me that the major disagreement that we have in this case is we come to this with a different perspective. Grange comes and says, this is a subject matter exclusion, and therefore you should somehow broadly interpret this exclusion. And you should say it includes battery as part of abuse, and that it covers vicarious liability, even though it doesn't say vicarious liability.
You're saying that some battery is not abuse.
Well, it depends how you define abuse. Abuse has several different definitions, one of which is sexual assault.
But counsel, don't we typically have to just use a common meaning? We don't have to broadly interpret or narrowly interpret. Don't we just use what's the common meaning of abuse?
I would agree. And the common meaning under well-established law is derived by looking in the dictionary. And I've cited for you a number of different dictionaries that include sexual assault as one definition of abuse.
Well, doesn't that mean that the term abuse then would be broader than the term sexual abuse?
I agree. Abuse would be broader than sexual abuse. But sexual assault is something different. You know, the starting point here is, what is abuse? And how do you define abuse in the context of this exclusion when it's not defined?
Well, counsel, why don't you just follow Justice Friend's then? What about that description we just heard about the beating this child received? Is that abuse?
Under one definition, that is certainly abuse. It is not sexual assault.
Well, why are you
focusing? I'm not talking about sexual assault, sir. The policy excludes coverage for abuse, correct?
Correct.
The term abuse, standing by itself. Not sexual abuse.
It says abuse.
Okay, and I'm asking you here today at the Supreme Court of Ohio, can you say that the beating that was just described to us is not abuse?
I think it is abuse under the term physical mistreatment. If you define abuse as physical mistreatment,
no,
it is
clearly
abuse.
No, I'm asking you and I as two reasonably well-educated lawyers, can you say, that's not abuse?
I can only say it's not sexual assault.
Why are you focusing on sexual assault? Where does that enter in here?
Well, it enters into it because that's what this whole abuse and molestation exclusion centers on.
Say that. Is there limiting language? I know what you're getting at. I know that you're saying because of the history of relationships of people in charge in religious institutions to young children, there has been many, many incidences of sexual abuse. But I don't see that in the language of the policy that refers that it has to be a sexual nature.
Well, molestation, I think you have to look at it in context. So it's an abuse and molestation exclusion.
Which is a very broad exclusion.
But molestation, again, is defined as an unwanted sexual advance.
Exclusively?
That's one definition.
Okay, exclusively. That's what I'm asking you.
No. There are other definitions of molestation.
We don't parse out when we're looking in the dictionary to find the common meaning of a word and say there's three different words or three different definitions that are all somewhat related, but you can be distinguished, and voila, we're only going to go on definition number three for the purposes of defining a term in a contract.
Well, I would disagree, Chief Justice O'Connor. When you are looking at an exclusion, you need to use the narrowest definition available. That has been black letter law, not just in Ohio, but everywhere.
So you're saying
forever.
The abuse and the molestation has to have a sexual overtone or connectivity to it in order for that to be effective?
Correct.
But it's
Did you argue that at trial?
Well, I wasn't at trial, and nobody there was really arguing coverage issues at trial. The only thing that came up at trial, as Justice Pfeiffer talked about, was the boy's statement that Mr. Vaughn spanked me with a ruler. So he said a knife, and then he later identified it as a ruler. That's really the only statement of what happened at the trial.
Besides the statements that were made by the physical evidence of the child.
That's correct. He's got these bruises and welts. But that's the only real evidence that we have. Nobody argued that this was a sexual assault.
But the language argued
that it was corporal punishment because they brought up a lot of corporal punishment type arguments.
The language of the exclusion says the actual or threatened abuse or molestation. It's disjunctive.
Correct.
So the abuse can be separate from and different from the molestation.
Correct.
Thereby separating the sexual component that you were arguing earlier.
Well, I think they're both sexual components. The way this is worded, I would equate something more to a sexual assault and a gross sexual imposition. That's the way these two terms work together. Sexual assault and molestation are different degrees, obviously, of some sort of sexual advance.
Counsel, so, I'm... I totally at sea on how this case ever even got to trial. You weren't trial counsel, but you've had an opportunity to look at it. It appears that the church just took an awful approach when first confronted by the parents and made things worse and worse and worse. So it eventually gets to trial, and I mean, I can't imagine that the parents were looking for, they were probably looking for this teacher to be fired and a minor amount of compensation. And it ends up with this huge verdict. So, can you give us, first of all, a little insight as to where this thing went off the rails? Because it most certainly must have somewhere along the line.
Well, I'd say bad things happen sometimes when you try very volatile cases. You know, they obviously very badly miscalculated. And from our point of view, from the coverage point of view, what I thought was significant is nobody was thinking about insurance coverage when this matter went to trial.
Okay,
and that includes, I mean, other than Grange. Grange thought about it, and then they decided not to intervene and ask any questions. And we wouldn't have a lot of the questions we have here today if they had posited some nice special interrogatories that would have asked some very specific question that deal with the coverage situations that we're now being asked to grapple with.
And when it gets to us, you filed a cross appeal saying, oh, but there was a corporal punishment coverage, right? And the Court of Appeals said no, and you filed a cross appeal on that issue, did you not?
I believe, yes.
And we didn't take it. So now you can't, but I take it that was much of what the trial was about, was this corporal punishment, and was it corporal punishment that went too far, or is that right?
There was certainly evidence at the trial about the corporal punishment standards of World Harvest
Church.
Well,
counsel, I thought that at trial, it was an argument that this was a skin condition for this child and that the actual beating didn't happen?
Yes, that was.
Okay, so you didn't have to say, well, it was corporal punishment. Did you or did you not use the defense that this was corporal punishment and therefore permissible?
That's what the plaintiff was saying. I mean, not that it was permissible, but they were the ones bringing up all the corporal punishment arguments. They brought in World Harvest corporal punishment policy. They asked Mr. Vaughn if he used corporal punishment on his children, things of that nature. I mean, World Harvest Church was always saying it didn't happen. Obviously, the jury didn't buy their defense.
So there was no argument that this was permissible discipline that had a physical element to it, and that's all it was.
I'm sorry, was there an argument to that?
Yeah, your client did not maintain, or Mr. Vaughn did not maintain, that this was necessary corporal punishment.
They did not.
All right, because your argument was that this never happened, and this child's condition is a result of dermatitis.
That's what their position was.
All right.
But the jury, hearing all of the evidence, reasonably could have decided, despite what my client was saying, obviously they didn't believe much of what my client was saying, but they reasonably could have decided this was some sort of aberrant corporal punishment that started out simple and went crazy. I mean, that would have been something within the bounds of jury determination if they had ever been asked the question, which they were not.
So you would agree, though, that corporal punishment is not abuse, and abuse is not corporal punishment?
I don't know. I struggle with that because of the abuse definition again. I mean, I think when you're administrating corporal punishment, you're obviously committing physical mistreatment. So that, in that sense, it's obviously abuse, depending on how you're defining abuse again.
Except that what you said earlier was that would have to have a sexual component to it to be brought into this definition.
I'm sorry, what was the...
Well, if I follow your line of reasoning here, corporal punishment can often have an intentional harm component to it.
Correct.
But so that leads us to the abuse exclusion, but you've said that abuse exclusion can only apply if there's a sexual component to it.
I
correct?
Agree. Yeah, that is our position, correct.
So you're saying that corporal punishment can never be abuse?
I don't think I'm saying that.
Well, you said that to have abuse, you have to have a sexual... Counsel, listen to my question. To have abuse, you have to have a sexual component to it.
Yes, yes.
And I just asked you about whether corporal punishment can be abuse, or abuse corporal punishment.
Corporal punishment is not sexual assault. Corporal punishment is physical mistreatment. I think it depends on what
so
your definition
is. So you say it's not abuse. In your definition, it's not abuse.
It depends on how you're defining abuse. It has more than one definition. I can't answer that question with a yes or no because it depends.
So you would agree abuse doesn't have to have a sexual connotation?
No, I would agree.
You would agree with that?
Yes, if it's okay. Physical mistreatment, it does not have. If I could address this.
We're seeming to go in a big circle. So as to corporal punishment, corporal punishment can be administered could be a battery, but not abuse.
Right.
But if it goes too far, it could be abuse.
And if they're covering corporal punishment, they must think it's not abuse because they're covering corporal punishment. If I could turn to vicarious liability issue, because I...
Well, right. in part because those questions are not really before us, correct? We didn't accept the corporal punishment question. The question about what is abuse, is that question even properly before us?
Well,
the definition of abuse?
The Grange is asking you to construe the abuse and molestation exclusion. I don't think you can construe it in a vacuum. You know, always when you're construing, you look at the totality of it. So I just don't know how. To me, the best way to do it is to look at the whole thing. I understand about the cross appeal, and that's a Supreme Court rule. I'm sure you know better than I do what the effect of that is.
All right, about vicarious liability,
please.
All right, if I could talk about vicarious five reasons why I believe the Court of Appeals was correct on vicarious liability. Number one, we're looking at the exclusion. It's on page 9 of my brief. It does not mention anything about vicarious liability. And we know from lots of cases, if they had intended to exclude vicarious liability, they should have said vicarious liability.
Doesn't it say by anyone?
It does say by anyone.
Doesn't that suggest that it could be both the insured and by anyone of any person while it in the care, custody, or control?
Sure. It could be, it could be the janitor.
Vicarious liability?
It could be other people. But the second thing is it has to be the actual abuse. It doesn't just say bodily injury arising out of abuse or molestation. It must be the actual abuse, which to me suggests they're talking about the actual act and actor, not some vicarious type respondent.
Is the word actual in the policy? Did you just add it?
No, it's in the policy. The actual or threatened abuse or molestation. Number three, this exclusion has two parts. Part number two deals with the negligent employment. So they are excluding negligent employment separately. By saying that they are excluding it separately, they are implicitly saying we are agreeing that negligent employment does not arise out of the actual abuse. If it did, there wouldn't be a need for a Section 2. And we know one of the rules of statutory construction, you have to construe to put effect to all provisions. The only way Section 2 makes sense is that negligent employment, they are saying, does not arise directly out of the actual abuse. Number four, arising out of. Hunter has defined that in a very specific way to be a narrow interpretation when used in an exclusion. And it means it must cause or contribute to the resulting injury. Vicarious liability does not cause or contribute to anything. It is a legal sort of doctrine that spreads risk. If anything, negligent employment would seem to be more akin to something that arises out of the actual abuse, but this exclusion seems to say no. That's why they put that in a separate section. And number five, the last sentence of this exclusion talks about of a person for whom any insured is or ever was legally responsible and whose conduct would be excluded by paragraph one. That is a reference to vicarious liability. They know vicarious liability, but they don't exclude it. They talk about it, they know it exists, they don't exclude it. So to me, that seems to be pretty clear that they're not excluding vicarious liability, and I think there's a good reason for that. This exclusion is dealing with people who have some blame. Some they've done something wrong. They've either been the actual abuser, or they've done some sort of negligent employment or supervision. They have some blame. The concept of respondeat superior, liability is being attached without regard to blame.
Thank you. Ms. Keyes-Walker, you've used your time. You may take a minute.
Very briefly, Your Honor, I would just like to say that he reminded me that the small child's comment, Mr. Vaughn spanked me, is sort of the origin of this paddling idea in this case. I'd respectfully submit to this court that a 2.5-year-old simply doesn't have the vocabulary for what happened in this particular attack. This was not a spanking, and a 2.5-year-old saying it was had nothing to do with this trial. They also said nobody was thinking about insurance coverage at the time of trial. Recall there was also personal counsel for World Harvest throughout the preparation and trial of this case, participated throughout, including the preparation of interrogatories, because there was a letter reserving rights and the personal counsel was there for non-covered and coverage issues. And they did not propose an interrogatory along the lines or felt that it was necessary to protect coverage. I would also like to just briefly say, in terms of the five reasons for liability, vicarious liability, understand the history of this, as explained by commentators, was the first section was targeted exactly to vicarious liability. The second section was belts and suspenders for jurisdictions like Ohio that says that you must look at the separate act and you can have separate acts with negligence. Yes, it's overlapping. Yes, it may be redundant, but that doesn't make it ambiguous. Third, no court has held that it is ambiguous, none. And it has been repeatedly applied to allegations that include respondeat superior and vicarious liability. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, we call a recess.